Hello English Podcast, a podcast for EFL learners and teachers. Hello everyone, this is one more episode of the Follow English Podcast. Today is February 28th, 2019. I'm Marcos Gazana and I'm speaking from Porto Alegre in the south of Brazil. This is episode 173 of the Follow English Podcast. And today I'm going to be interviewing Ben Worthington. So Ben, you're the owner of IELTS Podcast, right?
Correct, yes, IELTSpodcast.com.
Yes, let me get started and go straight into the questions here, Ben. So if there is anything else, we could come back. So let me ask you about your teaching career. When did you start teaching? Why did you start teaching? How did you get into the teaching career?
Gotcha. Okay, well, first of all, thank you for having me, Marcus. It's very kind of you, and very much appreciated this opportunity. So, let's see, I'll give you the very, very brief version. I finished university, my final year was in Spain, and because, I'm from England, the north of England, and I studied in Manchester, then I finished my university, final year was in Murcia in Spain. And once I finished that, I moved up to Valencia, and then in Valencia, I started teaching English. And I was teaching kids, teenagers, adults, students, business executives, and I realized that I really liked it. You know, the first class, I was just basically thrown into this big classroom with about 26-year-olds. They were all screaming and shouting, and I had no idea what to do. Okay. And then this other tutor just threw a textbook at me and said, go teach English. But and that was the very first English class I taught. But then since then, I've got more experience, and I've been doing it a long, long time now. I'd say about 15, 16 years, maybe. No, not that much. About 14, 15 years, more or less.
Uh-huh. And so that was back in Valencia. Yes.
Yeah.
Was that a good place to live?
Oh, it was amazing. Amazing. I really enjoyed my time in Spain. Yeah. And I liked the Mediterranean lifestyle. I liked the people. They're so happy and friendly. And I was living right next to the beach. So, it was a good life. It was a good life. But then, it's good for a lot of things, but for certain things, it wasn't so beneficial, you know, so that's why I ended up moving around a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And how difficult was it to adapt to the local culture?
I tell you something, I don't know if it's the same in Brazil, but like I remember my first couple of weeks, it took me a good 2 or 3 months, but it was like a lot of people, like even my male friends, but grab my shoulder like when they come to meet me. Yeah. And at first I was just like, why is everybody touching me in this country? Because we're not so big on the physical contact in the UK, you know? And that took me a little bit to adapt, a couple of months, and then I started doing it. And then when I went back to England, I was doing it all the time, and people thought I was a bit weird. But now I kind of got a good balance, I think. But overall, adapting into Spanish life was quite easy because it's so advantageous, you know, and it's so enjoyable. Yeah. I think it's harder for somebody from the Mediterranean to adopt a Northern European lifestyle, which is like work, money, career, you know. Whereas in Spain, they're different in the Mediterranean anyway, different priorities.
Yes. You know? Maybe in the future we could do an episode about This is one of the most interesting topics for me, adapting to a new culture as an EFL teacher myself. And so do you prepare? How long have you been involved with preparation for IELTS then?
Oof, I'd say a good 7 or 8, maybe 9 years, roughly speaking.
So half of the time, that you've been teaching already.
Yeah.
In what about the going back to the podcast? When did you start the podcast? How often do you publish a new episode, or do you? I mean.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, we usually do one every week. Yeah.
Could you repeat one every? I missed here one. There was a cut.
Sorry. Yeah. One every Wednesday, the bare minimum.
Okay.
And occasionally, we'll probably put one out at the weekend as well. So it varies between 8 and 4 a month.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And when did you start it? Has it been long?
Gotcha. Let's see. So it's probably about 2013, I think. Yeah, about 2013, I saw my YouTube creation date of the channel the other week, fortunately, but it's about 2013. So I think we were like the second podcast, focused on IELTS. There's this Korean one, but he abandoned his after about a year or two. But since I've started, a lot of others have come on.
You did beat him out of the market, huh?
I would like to think so. I'd like to think I scared him away.
Okay. And what else do you so nowadays you have the podcast, you also prepare students for IELTS, and what other activities do you have, like professional activities?
Right. Well, there's the YouTube channel. We're posting tutorials on there. There's the podcast, as you mentioned. We also grouped all the podcasts together. We put them on an online radio, and it just loops them. And then there's the website, IELTSpodcast.com, with lots and lots of tutorials there. But like other professional activities, I would just say that would be mainly it, We do have one new project in the pipeline, but it's a very, very early stages. Are you familiar with Alexa, on Amazon?
All right. No, not really.
Okay. Well, it's like this home speaker, or the Hey Google, or Siri. And we do one, and I'm working now with the developer, and it's really exciting because we're trying to make, it's almost like this, I'll tell you what Alexa is. It's like a home speaker. You speak to it and you say, hey, tell me how to cook an egg. Just talks back to you. It's like a voice interface. Or you can say, oh, what's the weather like in Madrid at the moment? And it just gives you the information, like spoken. So it's like this voice interface. And we're trying to harness this to make an app to help students prepare for IELTS. Quite exciting at the moment, Marcus. And like, it's taking up a lot of my time. And my girlfriend's so fed up about it because I don't shut up about it. We can do that.
It sounds awesome. Yeah. Yes. What about the? Do you offer any courses online?
Yeah. There's. Thanks for asking. There's the Jump to a Band 7, or it's free course, which is geared around the writing. And this is an online course we took a long time to develop, and so we could offer this guarantee. And basically, this is a course where we show them lots of tutorials, and then there's a task at the end of it. And the task might be where you just write an essay, but you implement what you learned in the tutorial, then you send it to our team, you email it to our team. We will do the correction for you, tell you where to improve, tell you where your errors are, tell you what's missing, and then send it back really fast. And we found from personal experience that this is the fastest way students can improve. It's just giving the feedback. Because a lot of courses, they just sell you the tutorials. And like, hey, you can't really improve just by watching a tutorial. You gotta implement, get feedback, do some work. Might sound old fashioned, but I think we both know.
Yes.
Being professionals, being professional tutors, that like, I remember one tutor used to say to his students, we cannot learn English for you. You have to, you know, as tutors, the student has to put in some work. So this is why I'm not a massive fan of those courses. It just gives you access to videos. Yeah,
I see.
Half of the recipe, you have to do the work. So,
I see.
And would you agree?
Yes, definitely. Then you started talking about giving feedback to students, and that's a good way to improve, yeah, for them to improve. Mm-hmm. And what are the most common mistakes students make in relation to how they approach the writing tasks?
Gotcha.
I mean, writing tasks.
Gotcha.
Well, if you want to speak about the writing tasks separately, yeah, we could. So do you, in this course that you just mentioned, do you offer preparation for both academic and general training writing tasks?
Yeah. In the course, we've got both modules covered. There's also a speaking confidence, like add-on course, you know, and that's like lots of tutorials to help boost confidence, exam strategies for thinking of ideas, for giving coherent answers, and to overcome nervousness, to speak fluent, and quick and automatic answers, that kind of stuff. But you said the common mistakes for the writing task.
Yes.
Okay. Well, if it's okay with you, Marcus, I'll just give you like a general overview from what I've seen, but could you tell me and the audience common mistakes you see specifically with Brazilian students? Because I'm really curious to know this, if that's okay.
Yes, sure. Well, I think for writing task one, maybe one of the common mistakes is not including a clear overview.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
People start writing about the reports, and I mean, that's the academic one, writing task one. And they forget to include a clear overview, which, to break it down to the listeners, it's basically what? It's a sentence that shows that you understand, you have the bird's eye view, let's say, let's put it this way, that you can see the whole of it as one thing, and you can, there is a little bit of inference here because you have to infer what is the graph showing you as a whole, yeah, and then you move on to the details and talk about the most significant changes or differences or whatnot, yeah. And what else do you see?
The errors I see, for task two, this is a very common very common issue. The student will go off topic, you know?
I see.
So maybe there's a question about, I don't know, gender equality in the workplace. And maybe the essay, the student, the writer, will start talking about unfair dismissal for women, you know, or something like that, which is under the umbrella. It's under the, you know, it's the same kind of topic, but the question specifically asked about gender equality, and the student has written about unfair dismissal for only for female workers, and possibly hasn't even mentioned the word male workers in that paragraph, for example. And I see this a lot, and also a very common mistake I see is that a student will get it unclear, the difference between, or won't get it clear, the difference between what the IELTS exam, what the question is asking for, which is like the communication or the quality of the communication of the answer, with the quality of the answer, you know? So a student might have the most genius solution for gender inequality, for example, in the workplace, but the quality of the idea is irrelevant. It has to be on topic, of course, as you know, but the quality of the idea is second to the quality of the communication of how that idea is expressed.
How fully you are answering the question, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And if you like, yeah, if you're answering all aspects of it, you know, and if it's on topic and if it's grammatically coherent and stuff like that, rather than trying to give a really intelligent answer, which might be difficult to communicate, and you tie yourself up in knots and stuff like that. So yeah, and this is quite a difficult topic or point for a student to grasp. Like, it's the quality of the communication, not the idea, that's important.
Yeah, you asked me to tell you a little about the common mistakes Brazilians make. So in your case, you get students or candidates or whatever you want to call them, you get them from all over the world, or is it especially from one specific country? Or
I get them from all over the world, and I've corrected so many essays now that I can roughly guess like which part of the world they're from their writing. You know, I'll just give you a quick example before we move on to Brazil, but if the student is writing long sentences, very flowery and very formal that just seem to go on forever, the student's probably maybe Spanish, French, or Chinese, from my experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
If there's
a lot of issues with articles, then they're probably from Eastern Europe, Slavic, you know, where they don't have Russian, where they don't really use articles that much. Mm-hmm. And the final one,
let me ask you one more thing here that came to my mind now. It's interesting to see your opinion about this. Here in Brazil, we have a lot of problems. I mean, most of the candidates have problems with writing. Yeah, I don't know if this is like the profile of the Brazilian who's lazy to write. And speaking is not that much of a problem, but then writing, it's always a problem. Can you see this in different nationalities? This is the first question. And the second one, how fast do you think, it's not directly related to this, but how fast is it possible to climb the bands? Like to go from if you get stuck in the writing, always in the 6.5, how can you move up to a 7? Or how long does it take to move up to a 7 or 7.5?
Okay, super questions. Right, first of all, like, the first question was super interesting about the nationalities, and you said the Brazilians. Well, I think, and this is just from my... This is based on scientific evidence yet to be discovered. But just from like a general point of view, I think the culture of the country really influences how the person will learn the target language. Because in Brazil, I'm kind of guessing it's quite similar. Some similar aspects as there is like Spanish and with Latinos are quite open, are quite communicative, quite warm, quite welcoming, and they're much sort of like more open like that. So the spoken part is probably why it comes to them, in the Brazilian case, why it comes more natural for them to focus on that. And then whereas with the Chinese, they usually excel much faster with the writing than they do with the speaking. And I think one of the reasons is because there's a lot of like peer pressure in China, and they've got this issue, I think it's across Asia, about losing face and looking silly, you know? And so this kind of restricts them with their speaking ability, but with the writing, you have the luxury of being able to rewind, edit, reconstruct the sentence, you know? Whereas, yeah, so I think the national identity, the culture, affects the student. It can be positive, it can be negative, but it definitely does have an impact on how they learn.
Yeah. My second question was about because here in Brazil we have this special problem with writing, and oftentimes students come to me like they have sevens in all the other bands, in all the other tests, Ben 7, but then they need to improve their writing and move up from a 6.5 to a 7 or from a 6 to a 7, something like that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it depends, I think, largely on the students. It depends on a lot of factors. But if we just harmonize all the factors just for the basis of this experiment, of this conversation, I would say to jump between bands that, like, a good 3 months just to be certain and to not waste your money in taking test after test. A good 3 months, and putting in the work as well, obviously.
Yes.
And getting feedback and really sort of like taking control of the situation, putting the work in, finding out your errors, learning the grammar rules where you are specifically tripping up on. If you're constantly tripping up on articles, then you've got to learn that inside out, obviously, you know? So probably at the most like 3 months for a solid, confident improvement of the band. But also I think that going from a band 5 to a band 6 would probably be a bit quicker than going from a 6 to a 7 and a 7 to an 8 and an 8 to a 9 as well. But I think it's really subjective on the student, the tutor, the conditions, the amount of time that's being put in, because we get students that come in with, like you said, maybe they've got 7s in all of the sections or 8s, and then they're just held back and completely frustrated with this disgusting 6.5 they got for the writing. In those cases, when the other band scores are quite high, what I found from personal experience is that it's quite easy, and maybe it can happen in a month, to jump up to a 7 or a 7.5. But also, one last thing, I seem to be talking a lot about this, but just one last thing. It also depends where the student is tripping up. You know, if they're tripping up on exam skills, which might be transforming the writing to an academic style or writing coherent paragraphs, this can generally be remedied pretty quickly. You know, and this is when we get the 2 week improvement or a 3 day band jump. You know,
rather than if they have rather than if they have to work on their language itself, right? Improve vocab.
Exactly. If it's a language skill, then, and especially if it's grammar, it's going to take longer. But if they've got solid language skills and they need exam skills, academic writing, paragraph formation, all this kind of stuff, then it's a much, much faster process.
In how long, or let's put it this way, how much time do you think a candidate needs? Someone who doesn't know anything about IELTS, but they're thinking about taking the test. How the minimum time they need to get familiarized with the test itself, just to know the formats. Let's say the guy has the candidate has a good enough level in all the different sections of the test, but needs to learn about the test.
Gotcha. I'd say like a month of solid study. If assuming they're at maybe like, I don't know, B2, C1 level, or if they're between a band 7 and band 8, then probably 4 weeks, okay, you know, to learn the exam skills. But if they are coming in at like 6.5 and a 7, probably 3 months of solid work. And I'm saying this sort of like cautiously, because I don't want a student to go in there, waste their money, come out with a 6.5 if they're aiming for a 7. So I'm saying it cautiously. And also I'm saying it with the view to sort of like come from above. So you're not just scraping a 7, but you're coming in at a good 7.5 levels. So as to be confident to get the grade that you want, which I'm assuming is a 7, which is usually the most desired band score. That's what I would recommend. Yeah.
In what are the best preparation strategies as a like a an overall a complete strategy? Someone who wants wants to immigrate or wants to needs that score and has, let's say, a year ahead to prepare. What does this candidates need, and what strategies do you recommend?
Good question. I'll be very brief, but basically it's practice tests. This is what I recommend my students. You do practice tests and you find out which is your weak area. Is it the reading? Is it the listening? Is it the writing or the speaking? Do these practice tests, get feedback, and then drill down. Do more practice tests because you're going to get more familiar with the test, but also you're probably going to find that maybe you just lose points on multiple choice in the reading, or you just lose points on sentence completion in the listening. And then do more practice tests specifically on those sections where you're weak, you know? And likewise, a similar strategy should be adopted for your speaking and for your writing. And in which case, getting feedback. And with your speaking, it probably helps to know if you need to focus on the accuracy of your spoken English, or maybe you need to focus on the fluency. You need to focus on the grammar of the vocabulary. So, yeah, you need to really just focus in on a specific area, and then just drill that, work on that, and then move on to the next one. That's my general advice. But I don't think it's that popular because it's much easier to take, I don't know, test after test, and real test after real test.
Yeah, but for the writing, as you mentioned earlier, I think it's very important for you to get some real feedback, some constructive feedback. Let's put it this way, and so that you can try to, like in the case of not being able to write a clear overview, the example I gave earlier, you can practice that and get feedback on that specifically, so that you reach a point when you do that more or less automatically, and then you are ready to face the exam. Yeah?
Absolutely. In the online course, we've got a section where the student has to brainstorm ideas for like 26 IELTS Task 2 questions, because thinking of ideas is a skill in itself. And we do it like about 26 times, because as you just mentioned, like you want it to become automatic, you know, you want it to be like muscle memory where you're not even consciously thinking of it so much. It's just like automatic. And of course, the more times you've done it, the faster you'll be. So you can really spend more time then on maybe checking for errors once you've finished, or planning a very coherent paragraph. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, maybe sometimes some people are trying to think about the most brilliant solution, as you mentioned, in writing task two. And I think it's good exercise to show people who are preparing a bunch of different topics and just talk to them about the topics, you know?
Yes. Well, I was sharing a similar strategy for a student who could never think of ideas. But no, actually, it was the other way around. One student of mine who I was interviewing, she said that for her preparation for the speaking, she got the cue cards from that quarter, because they, you know, they release the new cue cards every quarter. She got them, she brainstormed ideas, wrote ideas down for each cue card, so that on the exam, she was basically had all her bases covered, and it wasn't a completely never seen before topic. She had a few vague ideas which she could call upon and then build her answers upon those ideas, you know?
Uh-huh. In what recommendations do you have for the test day?
For the test day?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for confidence, a few whiskeys is always good. No, don't do that. No, for the for test day, one thing that I think is a good advice, and probably goes sort of like beyond normal advice. I think from experience, normal advice is get a good night's sleep, wake up, be fresh, feel confident, all that kind of stuff, which is valid. But I think one point that's not spoken enough of is to go in there warmed up. with your English. Maybe you've been listening to English all morning or speaking English all morning, but you want to go in, because I know from speaking, when I learned Spanish, that the first conversations of the day were terrible. But by midday, I'd warmed up, and I was even, you know, by the end of the day, I was even cracking jokes, you know. But in the morning, I was just rusty. I was slow. I was like scrambling around in the dark looking for vocabulary. But once I'd warmed up my foreign language speaking engine, boom, you know?
Yeah.
I wasn't bilingual, of course, but it was, there's a big difference. And this is really important for the speaking. You want to go in, like, in a very social mood, very talkative, warmed up, you know, a few conversations beforehand with friends, a good hour or two of speaking English. Just to show you, just so you show the examiner your true ability. You don't want to show them this cold, rusty English speaking ability. You want to go in there warmed up. So that would be my strategy for the speaking. And I think it's also applicable for writing, reading, and listening.
Yeah, and
you
even if you're
go up there warmed
yeah,
up.
And even if you're not able to speak to anyone on the day before the test, you could at least try to listen or try to get some contact with English, so that you are warmed up. Yeah,
totally. My friend Pedro in Spain, in Valencia, when he was learning English, he said that he used to just push his grandma around in a wheelchair, speaking English to her, and she couldn't even understand a word. So he'd be like, "Yeah, I just needed to speak it," and he'd be like, "Oh, grandma, over there, we can see the garden and there's some new flowers being planted, blah, blah, blah." You know, but he was just desperate to learn. He didn't care if she didn't understand him. And being a grandma, she was perfectly okay with it, you know, doing that. So, yeah, so you can speak alone. You might feel a bit crazy, but it's better than nothing.
Yes. Well, Ben, then would you tell us how to find your podcast, the course, and how to contact you, maybe?
Gotcha, yeah, of course. Well, students, if they're interested in taking the next step for passing IELTS, they can go to IELTSpodcast.com and they can leave their email. And once you leave your email, you can get access to lots of IELTS materials. Maybe if you're in a bit of a rush, you can just join the course immediately. And also, yeah, if you may be in between those stages, you can get some feedback from your essay and then just figure out sort of like the next step for you personally. But yeah, and also, well, once you sign up, you can get, there's an email address there where you can post us any questions you want. So yeah, that's about it. And also, just one last thing, if you found this tutorial useful, or if you've got any friends that find this tutorial useful, pass it along to your friends, send them the URL, and yeah, they'll get introduced to Marcus and Ben, and they'll be so happy for, you've improved their life.
Yes. Well, I would like to thank you very much for the interesting interview, and maybe we can in the future do some other episodes, some collaborations about ESL in general, about English as a second language and the teaching of English or something like that, or even again about IELTS, why not?
Definitely. I'm up for that, and you know where I am. So yeah, any ideas that come that pop into your mind, Marcus, just shoot me an email. And I'll be more than happy to catch up with you. It's been fantastic, and thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. So remember, you can send your suggestions or questions to info@followenglish.com.br, and you can also check the webpage for this podcast, which is at pod.followenglish.com.br. Thank you very much. I'll see you next time. Bye.
Goodbye. Thank you.